has Sydney just become the best capital city to invest in Australia? Sydney planning is going through massive zoning change that impacts land all across our city. This change is so large, I call it the biggest planning change I've ever seen in a short period of time. The New South Wales government is responding to this major housing crisis by changing the way zoning works here and allowing more density in well-located homes. This presents opportunities everywhere and creates what I call alpha investing opportunities. That is, opportunities to buy investments that outperform the broader market and benefit from these planning changes that are set to kick in 2024 or perhaps in 2025. Crazy, crazy changes happening so quickly that fundamentally change the way this city looks. Curtis, we're going to go through it all. How are you?
Yeah, going well. This is a little bit of a departure from what we normally do. So yeah, excited to unpack this in a little bit more detail. Okay. Yeah, they are some big changes to Sydney and how Sydney's going to look.
Yeah, you know I love talking about this. This is like one of my favorite topics. Talking about Sydney property, talking about planning, talking about change, talking about fundamentals of how to invest. And interestingly, if you go through our podcast statistics, the viewers might enjoy this. When we talk about where to buy, when we talk about Sydney planning and lessons in investing, those happen to get a lot of attention too. So yeah, viewers, if you find this one interesting, definitely let us know. And if you have any questions that you'd want me to, you know, answer on other podcasts, let us know. Curtis and I are going to read through what these changes are, and I'm going to provide my thoughts on why they're making these changes and answer a whole range of questions that we've come up with to discuss it all in this pod and maybe in another pod as well. Okay, let's go.
Let's run through what the proposed changes are. So there's a couple of different points. So first cab off the rank is they're looking at allowing dual occupancies like duplexes in all R2 across New South Wales.
Yes. I think they've got in the detail, so that's the high level statement. In the detail, they have square meter each size. I think they've got 400 or 450 square meters in there. So what is currently in place is a couple of years ago, the low rise medium density housing code kicked in, and that allowed duplexes to be done via CDCs, so via private certifiers, streamlined approvals, get them done much, much quicker. But there's handcuffs and roadblocks to actually implementing that policy and going through the streamlined assessment. Those handcuffs are different local councils and different LGAs have restrictions on the size of the land that needs to be in place to utilize this streamlined assessment. What this proposal change is saying, you know what? All of these restrictions, they're stopping housing supply. They're stopping people from actually building homes. They're creating elongated DAs. They're slowing everything down. Let's make it far simpler, far quicker. If you tick these boxes, so they've proposed to change the width requirement to 12 meters instead of 15 meters, and the size of the land, 400 or 450 in there. That change, if you meet those markers, then you can put a duplex on your single property at the moment. So this is a pretty controversial change where you're going to be putting duplexes everywhere where the single homes currently in place.
Yeah. And that's probably the one. So, you know, we'll unpack some of the other changes that are more linked to, you know, particular locations and being close to infrastructure. But I think this one's probably the one that's got the potential to, at least visually, you know, create the biggest change to Sydney and the way Sydney suburbs look.
Yeah, 100%. If you live in an R2 zoned area where you expect your house to just be with other houses, you know, quiet, leafy suburbs across the board, there's many, many Sydney suburbs all across the city that exhibit these profiles. They are now allowed duplexes. Duplexes will start to appear over time. That means more construction in and around you. The location that you operate in will change. And while it's more tolerable than some of the other changes in the sense that, hey, look, I can accept my neighbor turning into a duplex. That's only one other resident living there, or one other family. The change itself is quite large in the sense that it streamlines it all, makes it much, much quicker and gets duplexes done. And it offers, this one, I think, offers a lot of opportunity for investors as well, because a lot of investors, you know, like doing duplexes. It's mum and dad investors that often build these sort of products, really good rental income streams there, a good chance to add some value into properties as well. You're allowing it on so much more that this can easily translate into an opportunity for investors.
Yeah, and like you say, it's a relatively, you know, we might talk about some of the other changes that allow, you know, apartments and some more complex constructions. But this change is something that, like you say, mum and dad investors, it's not that difficult, or doesn't require a really, really specialized skill set in order to, you know, reap the benefits of these changes.
Yeah, exactly. This can change the value of land, though. So CDC duplex sites, you know, just using an example in Bankstown, something that I look at, for example, in the Bankstown sort of region, if you can do a CDC duplex site there versus you can't do a CDC duplex site, like it's a single house, you could potentially get, you know, a 10-15% increase in land values associated with that, maybe even 25-30% in some locations where the value of the existing house isn't worth that much as is, and now you can put a duplex on it versus who actually is going to buy this product being like, oh, I don't want to live in it, it's not a great house, but now it's a duplex site that could easily create an uplift in values for people, and it could get realized pretty quickly because a lot of people, a lot of builders want to buy duplex sites, and there's a market for this, and now there's more supply of land available to meet the criteria.
Yeah, exactly. So the second change that's been announced is allowing terraces, townhouses, two-story apartment blocks near train stations, town centers, key infrastructure, basically, also in R2 sites. But this is not New South Wales wide. Greater Sydney, Hunter, Central Coast, Illawarra and Shoalhaven. Anyway, basically not totally everywhere.
Yeah, it's not country New South Wales.
But yeah, do you want to talk through how this is a little different? You know, we talked about dual locks.
Yes.
But how terraces, townhouses, two-story apartment blocks differs.
This is where opportunity is knocking. So right now, the low to medium rise density housing code, this is the terraces, triplexes, quadplexes, and things like that. They are largely allowed on R3 sites across the city that meet a minimum square meterage site, roughly 600 square meters in most councils. Some councils push a minimum limit a bit higher than that. A lot of councils, 600 square meters, that's a low to medium rise code, R3 zoned though. Nowadays, they are swapping this, and this is golden opportunity, really, really powerful, because instead of duplexes, you could buy triplex and quadplex sites. And a lot of existing duplex sites are now going to turn into triplex, quadplex sites, which changes the feasibility and changes the fundamental value of the land that you have purchased or own when you can put a triplex on it or a quadplex on it. And the locations of these are now, if you own land near a railway station or a supermarket or key sort of pocket shopping center, for example, that you will be able to do this as long as the dimensions of that land benefit from these changes. So that is key. You can't be buying narrow blocks, basically. And a lot of blocks are narrow and small. Narrow, small blocks largely don't benefit so much from this. But wide blocks above 500 square meters, because they're dropping the limit from 600 to 500, one big key change there, R2 blocks near railway stations equals goldmine. So this is where, when you combine point one, point two, you're talking about basic fundamentals. Buy near a railway station and you are now being rewarded via state rezoning policies that override local council zoning policies. And importantly, it makes it so much faster, so much easier, so much quicker, so much more certain, so much simpler to get planning approvals. When you combine simplicity, speed, certainty into a development process, you are hitting the trifecta of wow. That's an expression for you, trifecta of wow. You can clearly tell I'm excited by some of these policy changes that creates land dynamics that really, really benefit, and it can ultimately change the feasibility of what you can do on that land. And when the feasibility changes and improves, the value of your land increases, especially if you don't have a really nice house on it, because the building value might not be worth much. You might just be sitting on land. Yeah, this is a big, big change.
Yeah, and you mentioned alpha return. So we spoke, you know, first change about, you know, the potential to do duplexes. But I think you'd kind of agree that this is this change where you can do more than two dwellings is really where you can start to see some of those really larger alpha returns for potentially sites that previously you couldn't do anything on that are R2 zoned. And now all of a sudden this opens up the chance, like you say, to not just potentially do a duplex, but add more dwellings than that.
Yeah. I can tell a little anecdote about this. So in mid-2020, when the low-rise housing code kicked in, a few months before the low-rise housing code kicked in, before these sort of changes, the last set in 2020, before they kicked in, bought a plot of land that benefited from these changes. It was an existing single house site, just a proper property investment on a large-ish block that you could put one house on and maybe carve up into two houses via a DA process that would have taken a long time with a lot of uncertainty. Bought that. I can't remember the price, but it was early 700s. 6 months later, we sold it for 1.35. That's a 90% increase in the value of land that occurred in such a short time period. Now, Sydney did have a massive boom during that little 6, 9, 12-month period, you know, when you include settlements and things like that. It was probably a 12 to 18-month holding process or process from entry point to selling point. But that is triple the return rate of the macro return rate. And it was available because what you could do on land fundamentally changed. And the feasibility on that land fundamentally changed. And as a result, the value of land increased. Changing one dwelling to four dwellings where the numbers work out pretty favorably for whoever's going to take on that development and offers them a return for going and purchasing that land at that 1.35 price, offers them a sizable return. Anyway, they're like, hey, look, I'll pay that because I can go build it and I can still make a healthy profit. That is how feasibility works. And if you can run a feasibility and work out, hey, I can now do more on my land and it's still profitable for someone to go and complete this, then you are a big winner in here. So leveling it up a little bit, I call this the biggest alpha investing opportunity I have ever seen in Sydney. It is massive. It is widespread. It has a whole number of characteristics and it's everywhere. When you combine all of that and you're offering speed, certainty, and that trifecta of wow that I just called, it is simple. So that simplicity is going to change feasibilities across the city. And there's going to be a little washing machine of value changes that occur to the housing that benefits over the next few years. And this is the template of where to look.
Yeah, like you say, I think that certainty is so valuable to investors because it gives you
100%.
It gives you so many options, like you don't have to necessarily undertake the development yourself anymore. You're not going to be dragged through a really, really lengthy like DA process with an uncertain outcome. Mm-hmm. There's the option to kind of identify something and a little bit like the example you used, you know, you could fundamentally get a large alpha return in a relatively short space of time with a relatively certain process that you can work through.
Yes, assuming these uncertain changes go through. At this point, they are proposed planning changes and they are experiencing massive pushback from mayors, council. It's huge. This is changing the way Sydney looks in one fell sweep in a six-month period that ultimately changes the direction, shape, and outlook of the city for generations to come. Potentially centuries to come. Like some of these houses are going to be there in 100 years' time. And the changes to that zoning patterns are today. A really, really good example to imagine this, if you're thinking of investing in this, what I urge you to do is go walk around Woollahra, go walk around Paddington, take a look, and then go walk around a low-rise suburb in the west somewhere where there's housing, detached housing. Those detached housing suburbs with railway stations are going to start looking like Paddington. And if you look around Paddington, you'll notice, hey, look, there's all these little terraces. That 600 square meter block is carved into 450 square meter terraces on that are three levels high and that are all 6 meters wide with a rear lane access and things like that. That's what it's going to look like. And if your land that you can have one old cottage home at the moment now turns into that, that may, and I use the word may because you need to know how feasibility works, may offer you opportunity to work out whether that value of land has uplifted. And you're starting to see this. We're starting to see this in the market. I track the market very closely. This sort of stuff is starting to see this a little bit, but it's going to, you know, go on steroids over the course of the year as more and more developers work this out. Certainty kicks in once it actually gets realized.
Yeah. So that's the first two changes, which are mainly focused on R2, like low density residential zones.
Yes.
So the next change, R3. So allowing mid-rise apartment blocks near train stations and key town centers. So same location near in key infrastructure.
Yes.
But yeah, and the same locations as we mentioned previously, Sydney, Hunter, Central Coast, Illawarra, Shoalhaven. But yeah, allowing mid-rise apartment blocks for R3 sites.
Yep. This one's a big change as well. The reason why it's a big change is R3 is supposed to be a type of density dwelling. When you imagine what R3 is, it's called medium density residential, which effect some version of that, which effectively means that like it's supposed to look like a medium dense housing. When you think medium dense, you probably think a low rise apartment nowadays, or yep. you know, Paddington Terraces, probably that is now considered low to medium, but medium is something that think of apartments. But when you go around Sydney, you look at many, many pockets, R3 zones in Sydney don't actually equate to medium density housing. They have FSR, so floor to space ratio limits, and building height limits that are antiquated back, that made sense in 1950 or something, but don't make sense today. They allow you to put, you know, two-story home or a three-story home and allow you to fit one or two dwellings on it, like a duplex, basically, which may have been a lot of density back in 1950, 60, but is no longer the case. Now they're saying that, hey, look, if you have R3 zone land in key areas next to a shopping center, a supermarket, or where people want to live, basically, yeah. near a railway station where they can get to work, then put some apartments on it. Like, go and actually create some supply. That's what the New South Wales government is coming out and saying, actually, oops, our local councils and our local zonings don't actually encourage people to go and do this. They say, put something really, really small on it. But that doesn't make any sense. What's the point of R3 zoning if you can't put medium density housing on it and the feasibilities don't stack up? The state government is changing that and saying in one big sweep, and they're making it big. They're making a 3-to-1 FSR with a 21 meter building height. That's 6 to 7 levels, I think, six levels probably, with a 3-to-1 FSR versus like in Bayside Council, for example, it's 0.6%. It's 0.6 at the moment. It's a 500% uplift in the floor space ratio that you can get. In Liverpool Council, for example, I think it's 0.5 at the moment, roughly. So that's a 600% uplift in zoning. You know, just the size of the uplift is enormous in many, many pockets. And this change is huge. This is the biggest of all the changes in terms of the amount of dwellings it could potentially create. Yes. So it is pretty massive.
Yeah. So that unpacks the changes to R2 and R3, which is, you know, the changes that are being proposed. So I guess let's take a step back or level up a little bit. So where are these changes coming from? You're quite active in the development space. Obviously, yep. the, you know, state governments, federal governments have all identified that there's an issue with housing supply and a shortage of housing yep. supply. So yeah, talk through, you know, how these changes or why they're making these changes to try and get housing supply actually occurring and getting that housing supply brought online rather than it just being theoretically possible.
Yeah, sure. We should probably step it up one level as well. So we talked about these changes, actually concurrent policy changes that they have as well. They've released this set of changes, which is massive in itself, huge. But at exactly the same time, they released, or maybe the week prior, they released what's called the Transport-Oriented Development Plan. Another set of zoning changes on its own would be absolutely massive too. This is 31 railway stations or something in that vicinity have been identified and said any land around it, anything except industrial, any housing land around it, go put apartments, go put this medium rise housing there. Even if it's R2, we don't really care what it is. You go put some apartments in it. We're going to zone it for apartments. So if you operate within 400 meters of a railway station and it's one of these 31 railway stations, go and put apartments on it. They have created some potential crazy rules here with heritage overlays and things like that and said, you know what? If you've got that, doesn't make sense. Why do you have these overlays right next to a train station? You're stopping people from actually developing and living near these areas where you have a 1,000 square meter block across the road from the railway station. That's a bit crazy when you've got all these young people who can't afford a home. You know what? If that's right next to the train station and that's next to the infrastructure that they need to get to work, go put apartments in it. Instead of having one family live in it, let's have 50 families live in it. That's what the state government's doing. That is huge as well. And realistically, I think that's from a money spinner's perspective, from a property investment perspective. If you own land in some of these pockets, especially the larger blocks of land in more premium areas, you are in, it's a lottery win. It could easily equate to, you know, lottery wins are very large now, but it could equate to a small lottery win associated with that uplift in zoning. If you can go from one house on 1,000 square meters or two houses to, you know, like 80 apartments or something huge like that in one fell swoop by the state government, that is pretty massive. So there's a whole list of train stations you can go on the planning website and take a look at. Yeah, there's a lot of developers crawling up people's backsides at the moment, trying to get hands on stock from the owners, particularly in the train stations up north.
Yeah. So we've unpacked what some of these changes are.
Yep.
So I reckon let's leave it here for this podcast. And then in the next episode, let's run through some of the specifics on how to benefit from these changes. What some of the risks, the pros and cons of using these changes as your investing strategy in Sydney. And we can unpack it on the next episode.
Look forward to it, Kurt.